Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah rabbil alameen. Ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Maliki yawmiddin. Iyaka na'budu wa iyaka nasta'in. Ihdina sirata al-mustaqim. Sirata al-ladhina an'amta alayhim. Ghayril maghdubi alayhim. Walid-dallin. I mean, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. This is Sister Khalida Akbar welcoming you to another episode of Narrative Aspirations. When we aspire, we go higher. Join us each and every Wednesday night, inshallah, from 7 to 9 p.m. as we highlight the people in our community who use their God-given talents to help remake the world into a better place for all people. We're asking that you join us tonight for our special guest facilitator, Imam Shahid Abdullah. Tonight we are going to be highlighting some tips for going back to school. We're going to talk a little bit about physical, emotional, psychological health and wellness, and spiritual. I want parents to think about how you have prepared your student this summer to return back to school as a whole person. As a teacher, we're looking for students to come to school prepared physically, meaning getting plenty of sleep, at least 6 to 8 hours a night minimum. That means to turn off the TV. And parents, that means you have some work to do to provide a consistent routine, to provide stability in your child's life. That means some things you're going to have to cut out. We're not going to be running to the store every night, to Walmart, to pick up something just because. We have to make sure that we are disciplined in order to send our children to school disciplined, because they are truly a reflection of us, and we can see those differences in the classroom when people have a more structured setting at home. So please give your child the best opportunity to be successful. Have them on a structured schedule. Maintain some consistency in their life. And if you need support, there are people at the school, guidance counselors. Now they have several behavior management technicians. They have social workers, psychologists. The schools have amped up, and they are ready to assist you. But please make sure that you do your very best in delivering to the school a student ready and able to learn. And so, alhamdulillah, let's go over some tips before we bring on our special guest. And we hope he can add to some information about curriculum as opposed to culture and building robust family and community life. Today was our first day back for our teachers, and we did a lot of data interpretation. And lo and behold, our school, the principal went over some really good information about data. We had some glows and some grows. And at the bottom were our African-American students. So I'm doing a special shout-out to our African-American parents. We need to make sure that we have a stable household, that we are promoting some kind of peaceful environment. Everything shouldn't be jumping off the walls and bouncing off the walls. Let's lower our voices, create that ambiance in our homes, give our children an opportunity to have creative minds, because now they're focused on entrepreneurship, and Allah is God, because that was the school that I wanted to bring to Masjid al-Shaheed, the school of entrepreneurial leadership, in addition to our Sister Clara Muhammad schools. So the world is going on. They're moving forward, and we need to be moving forward with them. We have to make sure that our children have a fair chance. Again, the African-American percentage was 1% increase, and he had to make a special caveat for our African-American students, and he's an African-American principal as well. So he went over all the data, and then the African-American students had their own categories because they're at the bottom across the board. So, a'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Let's get busy. We are spiritual people. We are people who fear God in various faith traditions, and we are calling on our parents and our spiritual leaders to make sure that you talk about education in your houses of faith. Talk about business in your houses of faith. Talk about culture in your houses of faith, and talk about government, all the things that are going on all around the world. We want people to be well-rounded. We want our children to know, have global awareness and know what is going on outside of the nicest pair of tennis shoes and the hairdo. Okay, we have a lot more to worry about in the world, and they can do so much more and not be in the best dress all the time. Yes, that's a beautiful thing. We're clean. We love to be beautiful. We're beautiful, clean people. And we like to represent ourselves well physically. But let's show up spiritually. Let's show up intellectually. Let's show up emotionally stable, not turning over desk and running out the classroom and everybody's going through trauma. We have to set a high expectation for ourselves and our students, because there's no way that we're going to be able to compete in the world. Even our Latino American children appear to come from more stable environments. They're calm, most of them, and they are receptive to the teacher's feedback, and they tend to follow directions quickly, more quickly than getting an attitude and, you know, just tuning out and turning on what is that called, a TikTok or twerking or just doing just silly things. And so we speak refuge against the shaitan, the accursed. We ask Allah to bless all of our children from every nationality all around the world and bless them to increase them in knowledge. Yeah, oh Allah, please increase our children in knowledge. Oh Allah, please increase our children in knowledge. Oh Allah, please increase our children in knowledge. And so with that said, we appreciate everything that the teachers are doing. We're preparing our classrooms. We're cleaning them up. I got rid of all clutter from last year. This was someone else's classroom. We're giving it our best, okay? So we expect you as parents, as spiritual leaders, as uncles, aunties, grandmoms, granddads, sisters, brothers, neighbors, that lady next door, the lady who works in the supermarket, the lady who works in the Department of Social Services, wherever, the children need us. And so make sure that you put that special focus on education in any form that you're able to do this year. Inshallah. All right. So, with that said, let's look at how we can be physically ready. We can have a decent bedtime. If you're dealing with younger children, 8 o'clock is good, or 7, if they will go to bed at 8 or 7. If not, establish that routine. It's never too late. You can turn on some classical music. It makes children take naps. We use it in daycare. We use it for years, and it also grows their brain, their mathematical thinking skills. It increases that. Classical music impacts that part of the brain that they use for reasoning and logic and math. So put that on and let them go to sleep very low. Also, just set the tone for a quiet environment. Your TV needs to be off. The lights need to be dim. Put on the holy Quran and at a low tone and let it recite until they go to sleep. If they have a favorite book, read it to them. Just establish some routine. It doesn't have to take a long time because we have to be realistic. We're working with different demographics, different schedules, and different lifestyles. But strive to do something, even if it's a five-minute routine. Making a do-out with your child, putting the covers on them, and giving them a kiss. Do something so they know this is what I'm getting every night. It makes them feel safe. It makes them know what to expect next, and it helps them to know that it's time to go to sleep. In addition to that, make sure that they are bathing daily. We have a lot of people who are coming from everywhere. I know Charlotte, they told us we're getting 100 new people a day. A lot of people are moving from New York and other places. We have a beautiful school system, hundreds of schools, but beautiful architecture and landscape and serenity. And so we're glad to be growing in leaps and bounds, but literally about 100 people are moving to Charlotte a day and have been consistently. So make sure your area, I'm sure they're doing the same thing all around the world. People are migrating to have the lifestyle that they want and to have better opportunities. We know that people can come from other places and get a house that would cost triple that amount or even double that amount. I don't know about triple, but double that amount from what they tell us and have a better house, much more land. So we're grateful. This is a lost earth. Find that place that your family is comfortable, that you can thrive in, and go there and make it happen and ask Allah to bless your efforts. Bless you with the income, bless you with the family structure, the sustainability, all those things that you want to give and live your best life so your children can have that opportunity. Also, we want you to make sure that you're eating a balanced, healthy meal. Balanced and healthy meal. So while you're doing all these things, make sure you prepare, if you can, prepare your dinner. Prepackage it, prepare it, prep it, do some things that will be easy. Make sure it's healthy. It doesn't have to take a long time. People get away from the thought that everything is time-consuming. You can prepare and prep, and you can put things in the freezer, mommies. You can do that and warm it up the next day, and it still tastes well. So make sure that you are able to plan ahead so you're getting those four food groups in. I think it's five now, but at least your meats, your vegetables, your grains, right, your dairy, so your child can fight any type of virus. And also, if you have a multivitamin that you approve, that's natural, and your pediatrician recommends, you can go ahead and give them that added edge. But in addition to sleep, the vitamin will help because COVID is still not going away. There's people who had it recently. They just don't talk about it like they used to. And people get over it, but it's still an inconvenience. It still takes about a week and a half to stop hurting and aching. And, you know, they don't know how it's going to impact the body in the future. Okay. So, with that said, we are going to make sure that you have the best. We're going to take a short station break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about building a culture in your home. And we're going to ask Iman Shahid Abdullah to prepare to talk about the culture in your home, because I think we outsource so much of our responsibility, and nobody's going to do and treat your children like you would. They're not. Hold on just a second. Okay. Yes, teachers love them and they can, but you know your children better than you anyone else. And the love of a parent is irreplaceable, even by a step-parent. They can love your child, but if you ever had your own child, you know that the love of a parent is irreplaceable. And so you need to make sure that you do your part and not outsource all of it and think that someone else is going to give them what you would give them. They can never give them that. They can strive to give them as much as they can, but it's not the same. So alhamdulillah, Rabbi Alameen. Allah says to take care of yourself and your family, and we are encouraged and our parents to step it up in all communities, in all socioeconomic backgrounds, and all socioeconomic conditions. We want you to focus on your children this year. Again, the resources are at school. If you need them, talk privately with the principal, send an email out. There's confidential ways of maneuvering. They even help with people who are in need of places to stay, people who have bills that they are not able to meet. They have those resources. One of the things is called a McKinney-Vento, and I know that there's a specific person at many schools who deals with families who have need for housing. So, inshallah, we are going to come to school well-prepared, well-focused. Also, if you have a uniform school, and I think they pretty much done away with many of those, because they like the children to express themselves and be authentic, and they want to be creative. But, however, if you are in need of clothing, there is also opportunities at the schools to provide that. I know our school does food banks. The parents can come by a couple times a month. So they're serving a lot more than just teaching our students. So let's do our part. And I can't say that enough. I will be right back, inshallah, after this station break.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dabrita Hadi, Director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, and we are back, and we're going to go to our listening audience. We're going to go to 205-470. Welcome to Narrative Aspirations. Your question or comment, please. Your mic is open. Welcome to Narrative Aspirations. Your question or comment, please.
Yes. Are you talking to me?
Yes, sir. Your
mic is open.
Wa
alaikum
assalam.
Okay. I wanted to make an announcement on the marriage inspiration that there's a sociable going on in Atlanta, Georgia on the 26th for those seeking marriage, the Muslims that's in that area that's seeking marriage. I would like
to give some
information about that.
Go ahead. Yes, sir. That's part of building a healthy family.
It's going to be at Masjid al-Mukminun. That's on Hank Aaron Drive in Atlanta, Georgia. Imam Furqan will be one of the conductors at that marriage sociable. And it's going to be food. It's going to be entertainment. And most of all, it's going to be a chance for Muslims to meet and greet that's single. I myself would say a few words there as the one of the hosts of the Muslim Social Life Committee that's presenting this event. We're actually conducting this event.
Tickets
are $35. That includes food and everything. But the main thing is a platform for you to try and fulfill the other half of your deen, which is marriage. It's going to be real nice. We have a nice turnout so far, and we want it to even get better. So if they need any information, I'm going to give a number. It's 404-781-7872, 404-781-7872, or they can call 205-470-2051 for information about this event. That's all. I hope I didn't take up too much time.
Oh, absolutely not. We thank you for that. So, callers, there's a resource for you. What I will ask you to do, if you can email a flyer to info@cwsc.us, we will share it. That is info@cwsc.us, and it will go directly to our email. We can share it. And also, if you send it to me, I will send it to our masjid secretary that goes out in the Jumu'ah announcement. And my email address is Khalida. It's like Khalid with an A-H. Khalida.akbar, 10, 10, kalita.akbar@gmail.com. Kalita.akbar, I'm sorry, Kalita Akbar, no dot, that's my work email. Kalita Akbar, the number 10, at gmail.com. Thank you so much for sharing, because we definitely want our families to be wholesome, and that is definitely a way to enhance every aspect of family life. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
All right. So, callers, we are going to move right ahead before we bring on our special guest facilitator today. Again, if you have a question or a comment, press 1. If you have a question or a comment, press 1. We talked a little bit about physical aspects and eating healthy. There's ways that you can pre-prep food. I know I saw my daughter do it when she was in college. She had a roommate, actually, who was from New York and was very organized. And she, her and my daughter got together, and they were prepping their meals instead of eating out all the time and saved a lot of money. So if you can pre-prep, even if it's like washing off the salmon, if you're going to make salmon and seasoning it and sauteing it and just having it ready to just to go in the oven and put it in sealed bags, it's really easy when you get home and you have a long day from work or school, or you just have been out taking care of errands or have babies at home. So there's so many family dynamics that we look for ways that we can simplify things. We work smarter, not always harder. Not necessarily harder. We want our lives to be, Allah says that this life was made for toil and struggle, and he also adds that he did not intend to make this religion hard for us. And we know we have to make prayer 5 times a day, and we're managing a lot of different obligations. So anything you can do to pre-prep those meals and just write them out just like a menu. And it's so much easier, believe it or not. I was a mommy one time to stay home. When I started working, and it was even at a daycare, it was so much easier because at that time I had children that were in daycare, and it helped me get a little more organized. Because as mommy, you have to be like a business-oriented person if you want to run your house with really structured. And at the time, I was relatively young, and I didn't have any, real pressure, But we did things when we, like my sister does, we did things when it was more or less convenient for us. But when I started working at a daycare, everything was on time. We had to have, bathroom. We changed diapers at the same time, because at that time I had infants. And then we had playtime for them, reading time. I mean, really, they do a whole 9 yards just for infants, because they believe, like we do, that everything starts at in those early stages. So even reading books, they let them just they can reach for the book and touch the page. That's considered reading. And looking at the vibrant colors, of course, they can't read. We're reading the picture for them. But we did a lot of things. But what I liked about it is they had a lady who came in with breakfast, lunch and snack every day on time. And she didn't go home till everything was done. She washed the dishes. She did everything. And then she gave a schedule out. So Monday, I mean, it wasn't always real elaborate. Sometimes they had spaghetti, sometimes with green beans. And then they would have like what is that toast that we eat? Garlic bread with it. And they always fed the teachers. This was a 5-star daycare, so it was really nice, and it was very convenient. But also, during breakfast time, they would come in and either have a hot or cold breakfast, and then we would clean it up, and she would come and serve it to each room with enough for the teachers on nice plates and everything, and then she would take it away, and then we would see her going down the hall and get delivering it to each class. So she knew exactly how many people were in each class. We just had to make sure we marked the papers for attendance and everything. But it was really nice. Laid out. And so then, they had the snack after the children woke up for lunch. They would play the classical music. And so that's where I first really got into getting more structure, and it prepared me for when I went into the work. Wanted to go back to school first. I went back to school first and then wanted to go into work when they got they became school age as well. And so, mashallah, if you can prepare yourself, mommies. I know it's hard sometimes because you're doing a lot of things, but you really don't have time to think about a whole lot of things that aren't productive when you are going to work, because you're around other people who are trying to make things happen. It's a team effort. Like I said, I didn't have to worry about it. You just show up, your breakfast and lunch and snack is coming for the children. You just sit it out. And then, you know, they go down for nap. They already provided all the cots. Everybody had – everything was just systematic is what I'm trying to say. It was structured so it was easy for you to get through the day as opposed to when I was home doing all of that by myself. And so, mommies, my hat goes out to you because I know that is a big difference when you have a big support system and you are not the only one that you are depending on every day. Hmm? Yeah, sure. And so, alhamdulillah for that. If you do have an opportunity to stay home, just do the same thing. It's a blessing. And if you don't, find a five-star daycare if you can, a five-star daycare who is big on literacy and does data and has a lot of activities, even from birth on up, because we had to do a lot with them. We had to give them sensory, put them in little pools and, you know, as infants. And really made a difference when they got to school, my children. Went there as, in addition to what I was teaching them at home, they really excel, especially in reading, because that was a big part of that director's goal, literacy. So with that said, we're going to move right along to, I think we talked pretty much about how to prepare a little bit, and there's other things that you can do that you normally do. I would like to hear some of the things that you already do in your home to prepare your children for success. Those pep talks, I know some people, we know that the husband in Islam, he is the imam of the household. What I did is I had found this little cute little podium from a consignment shop, and we had our little kutbah. We had our talims when we couldn't make juma. I set it up. I mean, our talims and our he was the khatib when we were not able to make juma, but most of the time we were. But my children, when they were really, really little, we didn't always go. And so we had like a second kutbah. And so just, women, sisters, make your home creative. Make it where your husband can give that same, especially if he's an imam. And then, like I said, they are our imams of their household, where he can give that same love and attention to your house, make it easy for him. Just like I talked about setting up that structure and having that those things coming on time each day and planning ahead. Just set it up where it won't be like pulling teeth. You already got the podium there. The Quran is out. You have something warm for him to drink, and it doesn't have to be elaborate, but get the children in the habit of sitting and listening for at least 5 to 10 minutes. It depends on how little they are, and he can give them some powerful information. So when you transition to the masjid, they won't just think it's time to just run around and play. There are times that we do at the masjid, but they'll be able to discern when that time is. All right? And so without further ado, we're going to talk about school supplies, and then Imam Shahid Abdullah, I know you're waiting in the wing. We want you to make sure that you take advantage of yourselves for school supplies and also talk to your school. They have a lot of supplies and donations. I know here in Charlotte we have a Classroom Central, which is like a free store for teachers, but your school has to be in their network, and you get everything from copy paper. I mean, it's elaborate. They give us everything that you need to run a business, even, because you don't use all that, but you get this handout, or now you even scan it, and they give you like 125 pencils, 125 pens, two or three reams of copy paper, folders, science kits for STEM, magazines, and little crossword puzzle books and STEM that your children can work on in your classroom. They have at least 3 to 5 book bags that you get, and it's every month you have to just go in and they email it to school, and you set your date and you pick it up after school. But it's amazing because it's like when they tally everything up, you still check out and they bag it up for you and everything. And a lot of them are parent pioneers, like retired people. So it was someone's idea to do that, but it's called Classroom Central. I don't know if you have one in your city or state, but it's wonderful because it cuts down on your expense as a teacher. You get the notebooks, the papers, the composition books, everything that you could need, the folders, the book bags, the toothpaste for the students who may need it, extra decorations for your classroom, the border. It's just so many things that they give you, and it's free. And so, like I said, the checkout's almost $500. If you go every month, you don't have to go every month because really you don't need everything every single month, but it's an option. You just click on it, sign it up, and go. And that's a shout-out to Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools for doing that. Also, check with your child counselor if you need help with school supplies because they do have resources through your school social worker. And I'm just not looking really think of right now. I know there's a lot more to preparing for school, but I just wanted to cover some of the basics, and we'll be getting a little bit more information for you, inshallah, as the year goes on. The children haven't physically returned to the classroom, but we are ready for them, and we hope that you are too. So with that said, we're going to bring on our special guest facilitator. Assalamu alaikum, Imam Shahid Abdullah. Welcome to American Muslim 360.
Wa alaikum assalam. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sister Carla. That we are just always grateful that you give us an opportunity to come on and talk about things dealing with Islam and dealing with our community. And I was especially grateful today to hear you and explaining the importance of education and the importance of educating our children and parents being an intricate part of that. But first, I want to just say, A'udhu billahi min shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbi al-Ameen. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasul. And I greet you again in the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. Yes, it's a very beautiful listening to what you are talking about in terms of being an intricate part of your child's education, not just having a child and loving the child, but being an intricate part in helping them in their education, because their life in the future is going to depend upon what they gain during their years of being educated. Most people who are very successful, when they look back on their success, they attribute it to getting an early start in education, especially reading, education, and getting having a love for education, because it filled them up. And I know in my research, I find that education is so important. We as African Americans, we're in a particular time period. It's temporary, but it's a particular time period that we have to do extra. We have to go an extra mile because of what has happened in the past, not as far back as slavery. We're not talking about that. We're talking about what has happened in the past in the last 50, 60 years, because up until 1945, we were doing pretty well. And I was mentioning in a talk earlier today about a special meeting that was held in 1963. And the special meeting was held with African-American leaders who were talking about integration and why they did or did not want integration. They had very powerful people on there, and Malcolm X attended that meeting. And the only one actually who was for integration, of social integration, was Foreman. But the rest of the people in that meeting, they just wanted equal protection under the law, because the point was made that at that particular time, African Americans had businesses, they had their homes, and their communities were developing strong, and they had schools, which is very important, as what you were talking about today. And in their school systems during that particular time, African Americans were growing strong. In their school systems before integration, African Americans wasn't at the bottom of the class, they were at the top. These African Americans were going to school, graduating from Howard, graduating from Harvard, graduating from many other colleges after they left high school because of the education they received from their teachers and the care they got from their parents. It was during that particular time that these men were talking about, the African Americans had a connection between the teacher and the parents and the students. It wasn't like so separated like it is today. It was then the parents was concerned about their children and concerned about the teacher's welfare and well-being in terms of being in a situation where they can do their best job, and they looked up to the teachers, and the teachers looked up to the parents and did everything they can to help the parents, and there was a shared love of the parent and teacher for the children. And this is what made the schools during that particular time before social integration so well developing, so well in developing the students for tomorrow, for their future. It was a great time, and many of these leaders were making a great point in that we really didn't need social integration. We just needed equal protection under the law, that the law that pertains to every citizen in America should pertain equally across the board to everyone who obeyed those rules and regulations. That's all we wanted. I think Johnson at that time signed a bill where it, 1965, I believe, and where they claimed this equilibrium kind of thing, that it was really liberating laws and things they called themselves putting in. They put in laws where they not equal pay, but they put in laws where they say minimum wage law. The minimum wage law, as most scientists look at now, caused the great harm to African-American people, and especially at the time they were put in, because people who were working, and they were working, had jobs, and they didn't have a real problem with the living at that time. But when they put the minimum wage law in, it meant that some of the employers had to make decisions on how many people they were going to hire and who they were going to hire at that minimum wage, because they had to pay them more now. They had to pay the individual more than would have paid two or three people when there's no regulation like that. So African-Americans, by the hundreds, lost their jobs. Although the jobs they lost, somebody might say, well, I didn't want a job like that anyway. But they had jobs that were taking care of their families. Their families were being taken care of and their children were being taken care of, and that helped them with the education of their children. But when you take a job away from a person and then that person has to go out and try to get another job, then the government steps in with another plan to say, well, okay, look, what we're going to do is we're going to give the family extra money, but the man can't be in the family. If the man is in the family, we won't give him as much money. So it made sense for the husband or the male in the family to not to be on site or be there, because now the mother will get more money for the children for that living that they was providing. And it was a tool to break up and to dismantle the families of African-American people. And what makes it so, I won't say terrible, but what makes it so obvious that this was taking place, that when you look at the statistics, and most of us start making a habit of looking at statistics and facts, then we won't listen to the rhetoric that's in the street. The statistics said that at the time, we're talking in 1963, at that particular time, the children in single-family homes, who didn't have two parents in their home, was only about 40% of that was even ever happening. But now it has already jumped up to 70%. 70% of a situation that was 40% back over 60 years ago, you're talking about a damaging impact that had on many families, many African-American families. So we get this situation today that we look at the statistics Sister Kalita explained that in her class, she's a witness of the facts. The facts that when the kids come back to school and they look at the list, African Americans are at the bottom. They're at the bottom of the Spanish American, at the bottom of whoever's in that. Why? Because the family structure has been broken down. The family structure has been broken down to such a degree the parents can no longer instill values into their children. They don't have values into their household. Even those who, well, you have two parents, they don't have the values necessary to compete with the situation that is going on in America, especially toward the African-American people. Some African-American people don't even know what's happening to them. They just take the loss. They just say, okay, we're just at the bottom. We're just bad. We're just no good. We're just, they even have turned, and if you see these programs that's on TV now that are being produced by young African-Americans on these Tic Tacs and things of that nature, they have these shows they do themselves. They have reverted back to calling themselves nigger, negro, and my nigger, my this and my that, and not even realizing that that's one of the worst words you can call a human being, because it's lower than a slave. If you call someone a slave, at least you're giving him credit for being a slave. In other words, he's working, and he ain't getting paid good money for his work. He's been taken advantage of for his labor. He's a slave. But when you call him a nigger, he's below that. A nigger is the lowest characteristic on the in a human being on the planet. That was a word invented by poor, very poor European Americans to downgrade the African American even more than he was downgraded. And now that the slavery had changed and there was no more slavery, he had the European American use that term to put the African American psychologically at the bottom of the barrel, even when they talk with them. And African Americans at one time wouldn't use that word at all, referring to each other. But now it seems to be back in style with them. And this is a testament that we have gotten to the point where we are not recognizing ourselves as human beings. We're not even human beings anymore. We're niggers now. A nigger's not a human being. A nigger is the worst aspect of a human being. You can't call a nigger a man or a woman because that's not what they are. They're worse than that. They're lower than that. When a woman calls herself a woman, she wouldn't dare allow somebody to call her a nigger. If a man calls himself a man, he wouldn't dare allow anyone to call him a nigger. And he definitely wouldn't call himself a nigger. But because they have been so decentralized, their home life values, their values about how they should conduct themselves has been just shredded. Has been shredded to the point they take any kind of abuse. And when a person is called a nigger by another person outside of their group, that's the worst abuse they can have. But when the person calls himself a nigger, he is saying to that person who invented that word to downgrade him, that you the boss, I obey whatever you say, you the boss. If you think I'm a nigger, I'm a nigger. If you invent the term nigger and call me nigger, I'll be nigger for you. It's a terrible state. It's a terrible state of the mind for the human being to let himself lower himself to such a status. Although it was put on him, he didn't have to allow it to stay on him. No values. How can a person with that mentality have values? Then how can they raise children to have values? So what you get in the school and the statistics you see because of the values. Values are so important for the human being. It's one of the aspects of culture that's passed on from generation to generation. Once a people lose personal values or cultural values, they become the lowest of the low. They become not only the lowest of the low in terms of their behavior, because the values are what determines the behavior in terms of right and wrong, become the lowest of the low in terms of productivity. They can't produce well in the society. They become lesser of the producers. And this is why employers don't want to hire them. Employers don't want to hire somebody they know they're going to have to pay, and they're not going to do the work. They're going to be sitting in the person's business somewhere, hiding behind a box, or ducking the work, or stealing because of lack of values. So their human capital goes down when the people don't have values. Their human capital, their worth, what they're worth, it goes down. in the eyes of everyone, in the eyes of teachers, in the eyes of employers, in the eyes of government, and in the eyes of other human beings. So it's so very important for us, especially those of us who profess Islam, follow Quran, and follow the lead of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam as our living example. Recognize in the Quran is talking about values. The Quran is talking about establishing values in our personal life and our collective life. Implement the Quran in order for those values to be valuable. Implementing. We had a time in our community, the African-American people, when we used to call each other brothers that stemmed from way back. And we personified it in the Nation of Islam, brother, sister. And the African-American population picked it up, and they were doing the same thing. During that period of time, there were less murders and attacks of African-Americans on African-Americans than they are today. And because it's much more difficult to steal from someone or to hurt someone or to talk bad about someone if you feel as though they're your brother or sister. It's a different set of values that come into play when you just do a simple thing like go from one word to another word depending upon the value of that word on your character. And if that word carries value with it, then you would inherit the power of that word to carry out your life. And if it's a negative word, like the word nigger, your values are being torn down. Your values are being disrupted. We have to look at ourselves as human beings. And I think we should look at ourselves, especially in the African-American community. The Muslim community doesn't seem to have a real problem with it. We need to get back to the simple calling of each other brothers and sisters. We seem to be able to do that pretty much in our life. But the way we did it back in the Nation of Islam during the time of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and at that particular time, we sort of like did it so much with each other that the African-American community itself began to gravitate to the idea of being brothers to one another. And that brought about another sense of loyalty and a sense of unity to our cause as a collective people. Words, Imam Muhammad said, make people. And we should take that serious. We shouldn't take it so lightly because someone else hasn't said it. Just because an African-American said it, we shouldn't take it to heart. We say, well, Imam Muhammad said, so I take it to heart. But we don't respond that way. We don't respond as if we're taking to heart what Imam Muhammad said when he said words make people. How many of us choose our words that we use, knowing that every word has an effect on the person we are talking with or the group we are talking with? And it has an effect on them, and it has an effect on our own mind. We have to change our vocabulary to get a response from the outer community as to how they will behave. Just by us changing our vocabulary. Words make people. If we hold to that, then we can see some light at the end of the tunnel, especially when it comes down to teaching our children how to be better students so the teachers won't have such a problem with the African-American students. And this is not what we would call something that's indigenous or something that's innate to the African-American children. No, it's not. Because we have evidence that shows that in these charter schools, in some of the major cities where they have these big charter schools, and predominantly 80 to 95% of them are African-American, they have outstanding students. Standing students, scoring high in the national ratings, going to some of the best colleges and so forth throughout the country. So it's not an innate characteristic to have students that come into a school and consider to be the worst in the school. It's the type of school, the type of message that's shaping the mind of the students. And it's shaping the mind and the values and the hopes of the parents. That if we just look at the facts, if we just look at the facts and sift our way through the evidence, we can begin to see some of these things that are obvious to those who have their eyes wide open. Values. Values are so important to the development of an individual, to the development of a culture, to the development of a society. And as a religious person, whether it be Jew, African American, or what they call the black Jews, the Hebrews, or Christian, or Muslim, we should be the leaders and vanguards of the concept of values and demonstrating it in our behavior, not only toward our close friends, not only toward the people in our religion, but the people in all of faith and all walks of life. That our behavior take on the same form that Prophet Muhammad's behavior took on. Prophet Muhammad's behavior made him a living example of how to follow the Quran. Remaking the world is that's just words. Remaking the world. Especially if we don't understand the words. They lose the impact of what they're meant to establish. Remaking. Once we let those words leave our mind, we should know that how to get them out of our mind or out of our mouth across our lips and our teeth, to get them words across there, we would have had to done in our own self, in our own makeup, that we are remaking ourselves, or we are being hypocritical. We are being hypocritical because we are saying to the world, we're going to remake you, but we're not remade. The remaking of the world has to begin with self. Establishing the values that bring people together. Establishing the values that make children love parents and school and teachers. Bring back that kind of love that our people had before this concept of social integration took over their minds and their communities and their livelihoods. We have to do that. And we cannot look for someone else to do it. We cannot wait till the European American do it. What do we need to see? Do we have to see any more from the European American to see that they're not going to do anything of value that would help the African American people to become independent on their own? In 1776, we fought in the independence, in the Revolutionary War. We fought in the Revolutionary War for our independence and won. And the European American had the nerve, the audacity, that some 8 years after that, after the Declaration of Independence, they wrote into the Constitution of the United States of America that only white men, they used that term, which they got from the early days in the Virginia laws and slave laws. They said only white men with property can vote in the national elections. Do you know how far back that set the African-American people in getting, in terms of being part of the policy making of what would happen in the country? We weren't at the table, but yet we were in the war. And we fought against Great Britain and fought against Loyalists who were the Loyalists. During the War of Independence, they had patriots who was fighting against the King of Great Britain for overtaxing the colonies. It wasn't about slavery. The whole war wasn't about slavery. It had nothing to do with slavery. It had to do with the taxes that the king was putting on the colonies. That's why they rebelled. And the Loyalists, it was the other group, and the Loyalists thought the king was right. They were colonists too. They thought the king was right, so they fought against the patriots. So the patriots fought against the colonists, who were the Loyalists, were called Loyalist colonists, because they were on the side of the king, and the patriots fought against them, and the Africans of the time was fighting on both sides. They were fighting on the Loyalist side and they were fighting on the Patriot side. Until one of them, a reverend, who gave the sermon on the capture of General Cornwallis, that's in Harvard right now, that information. And he talked to the African Americans, the Africans during that time, and said, we would be better off siding with the Patriots. Somebody's phone is open.
Join us on our staff meeting.
Somebody's phone is open.
Our committee.
Can you close your phone, brother? The fact of the matter is that they, during that time, we saw that the European American allowed the African-American, the African, to fight with them and win the independence. And most of the Africans who fought with them to win their independence, they were won over by another African who told them that we would be better off with the Patriots because they're coming in with a new idea, a new way of governing. And we know that the old way that the king has governed is not good for us. They haven't done anything for us for 200 years. And he was talking to the African Americans in that particular sermon. Is written in there, and many of you should get this. It's called a sermon of the capture of the Cornwallis by African American, because there's other sermons on the same issue. But this one's by African American. Make sure you get it. They have it at, in Harvard. But then now, what he said, about my complexion, this is the word he used, about my complexion, I'm like you. He said, we are all of African descent. And that's the word that's in this document. And we should side with the patriots. And that's what they did. They sided with the patriots, and that's what swung the war. That's what swung the war in favor of the patriots. If the Africans had not sided with the Patriots against Great Britain, Great Britain would have won the war and pushed the colonies back into the form of taxation and everything else they had on them. Because it wasn't a wipeout that the Patriots did of Great Britain. It was because they had the impact of the Africans. One of them named Lafayette. I mean, one of them was friends of Lafayette, Amistad, Jordan Amistad. He was an espionage. He would tell Lafayette what the British were doing, how they were planning to attack next, how many men they had in Dustin's place. That's the kind of advantage that the Patriots had in that war. And yet, they stood by, and 10 years, they stood by and watched those who was colonists. Now, they were Loyalists against the Patriots, but yet when they won their independence, the Loyalists also had their independence. They became American citizens too. And yet, the advocate who fought for that right in the 8 years that put together the Constitution, and in that Constitution, it says only white men age 21 with land could vote. They cut out the advocate completely. We cannot look for the European American to do us any favors. We can't do that again. And we said it time after time after time. After the Civil War, they came with the Ku Klux Klan, and they didn't stop them. The law didn't stop the Ku Klux Klan for hanging African Americans. They still don't do that. We cannot trust the European American to guide us. I remember once seeing Muhammad Ali in a interview, and he was in England. He was talking to the moderator. He said that if 10,000 rattlesnakes came in my yard, coming in my door, and of the 10,000, 1,000 of them was good rattlesnakes. He said, do you think I would leave my door open praying that there's 1,000 rattlesnakes going to hold back that 10,000 to keep on them from coming to my house? He said, no. So you wouldn't do it either. That's the logic. There are some European Americans who know that they know that the others of them have done wrong. They've done the African wrong. They've done the African American wrong. They are doing our school system wrong. That's why the book was written, The Miseducation of the Negro. They wasn't miseducated by themselves. They were miseducated by the people at large who was called the European American. We have to take charge of our own words. We have to take charge of our own behavior. We have to take charge of our own lives. We have to take charge of these things and remake those things. Then we will have the power to remake the world. And not until then. I know I went a little bit off the subject, Sister Kalita. I know you had want to talk more about education. Sometimes you know you get the going in a certain direction and the things come across your mind and Allah the best knower and research so much you can't keep it all in. You just can't keep it all in, and we shouldn't do that at any rate. But I do a lot of research, so. Many times when I talk, I rehearse the research because so many of us don't have some of this research, especially the book I have called The Negro Market, the one that had been taken off the market. It was done in 1932. I was blessed to get my hands on it, and now I produce them for the rest of the African-American community to see these things that are real. I didn't want to go too far into your program, and I don't know if you had any listeners you wanted to talk with another part of your program. Sister Kalita. Don't know if she's
Yes, I am so grateful to you for your commentary. We are moving into Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahim Allah Alay, and we thank you for going into the in-depth, the culture and the education components that are so vital to the success of us as African-American people and as people of all nationalities. We want to really thank you for your the opportunity to share with us. We want to give you an opportunity to share how to get your books, because you have books that also address these concerns from education to culture to politics to wealth and health. So can you give us the title of your books, how we can get them? And then, yes, we are going to move forward with Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahim Allah Alay. Callers, I also want to know if you have a question or a comment, please press 1. Question or a comment, please press 1. I don't see any at this time, so we are going to be moving forward.
Okay. Well, my books can be purchased at Amazon.
Oh, I do see one. I'm sorry. Excuse me. We do have one caller. We're going to go to 914-434. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Narrative Aspirations.
Yes, this is Muhammad Sharif calling from Albany, New York. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam.
Yeah,
welcome, brother.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say, Imam and Sufakura, one thing we don't want to overlook about the inside job.
Mm-hmm.
It's always inside that creates the most damage. Like inside agents, those type of things that sit in among us. You know what happened with Marcus Garvey? It wasn't inside. Said things about him that he was dealing in fraud and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He had no support and he was deporting him out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Under Elijah Muhammad, you know there were agents inside where he had to run for his life. We all know that man had to run for his life in different cities and towns. Agents working for the government and other places.
Mm-hmm.
When Imam Muhammad, he told us he had the same situation from day one he came to the leadership. One time he told us in a convention in 2003, I guess he had taken as long as he could because he wasn't getting support.
Mm-hmm.
He had to make it known when I'm not getting support because 80% of the imams do not support my leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 80% of anything, say if you had a bank, the president of a CEO of a bank, or insurance company, or a big business, or something that makes airplanes, or boats, or ships, or weapons, and all these things. Think of that chief executive officer, or the president of that company, had 80% of his vice presidents and all those department heads did not support him. What thing?
Right.
That there's no way that those big businesses could have existed. Even if you go outside of our America, go to Turkey, to Germany, or France, or England, or Singapore, Malaysia, or Bangladesh, any other country, if any of those people that were next to the leader of that country did not support mm-hmm. them, well, you think what happened in those countries? We were civilized, and we took the example of, man, we told about Prophet Muhammad, when 10,000 came back strong, he said no bloodletting.
Mm-hmm.
After many of his followers had been mutilated, had been murdered, women had been raped, and man's brother, he said no bloodletting. He killed my uncle. He cut him all up. And my sister, they raped her. You tell me to take no revenge or nothing? They said, yeah, no bloodletting. And they were strong supporters, obedient to Allah and his messenger. And they did what he said, no bloodletting. And Imam Muhammad mm-hmm. showed that same mercy. That 80% that was working against him, not supporting leadership. Someone he said, Brother Imam, if we can do something about that, then I guess Imam said we're going to do the same thing Prophet Muhammad did. He said, no bloodletting. Although 80% do not support me, I can't make any progress.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't overlook that. We can talk about outsiders, we can talk to so-called white man and everybody else, slave master, But then if we don't put all the back on the table and talk about that inside job that they did for us, then Allah is going to punish us.
Mm.
We deserve punishment. And the whole world knows this. The whole world knows that Imam did not support Imam Muhammad's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely have to deserve our Allah's punishment. And like you said, it be eliminated, wiped out. It won't come from outside. It'll probably come from inside of us that didn't say anything, didn't support the man. It's 15 mm-hmm. years since he passed, and no one even speak about, afraid to speak about when it comes up. They just get quiet like they didn't hear it. But 80% mm-hmm. of the supported leadership, 15 years later, and that's why we can't make the progress. It's not outside. We're free, the so-called white man, one hill, or whatever. They don't do anything to stop us.
Right.
It's inside job. So I need to
right.
take my comments on that, brother man.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. You're absolutely correct. We got to change ourselves from within in order to make the changes without. And the people who are inside in terms of against their own people and their own movement, we have to move straight through them because we can't keep trusting them. We trust them with too much. We trust in people with our lives and our future, and we shouldn't. But I thank you very much for your comments, brother. And you're absolutely correct in terms of your viewpoint and what you pointed out. And I want to just remind again you can get all my books on Amazon. And I believe you have a couple, Brother Sharif.
I have my own, and I'm supporting, trying to get everyone else to get the books. Yes, I have them. Yes, I have them.
Alhamdulillah. And you can get them. You can get them directly from me. The package that we have is called the Knowledge Collection. You can get that for me directly. You can go to call me at 908-296-2558. That's 908-296-2558. Or you can email me at Shahid, that's Shahid _Abdullah, Abdullah, 2000 at yahoo.com. You can email me there, and my website is going up this week. We're working on it now, presently, as of speaking. You can do it with either ShahidAbdullah.com, or you can go to BuildingNewAfricaUSA.com. Both of those will go to that same site, so you can get the books there. And I believe you can, and we still have a good price on that collection too. We will keep that old price that we had. We were getting a sale price on the collection to get the old knowledge collection we had for a particular price. So you can call, get your books, and see some of these things. And we have to start working from a position of facts, and we have to use evidence to make our decisions, the things we talk about, the direction in which we want to go. We want to be sure we have all of the information we need to go in a positive direction. We don't want to do what the old saying, shooting from the hip, you know, and most of the time shooting blanks. But the main thing we want to do is start moving with knowledge, moving with facts, moving with evidence. can't be afraid of those things. We have to embrace those things. There are all kinds of evidence to show that Imam Muhammad was right, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was right, Marcus Garvey and Frederick Douglass and Turner, they were right. There's evidence to produce that. And the evidence also is showing that our community, the African-American people, our people, all of us, the 42 million of us, are in a place to really prosper from our future. We can either prosper if we preserve it. We have to preserve it. If we don't preserve our heritage, then we will lose. But we have within our power to preserve it. So that those are facts. We could look back in history and see those same things working. We could look at religious texts. We could look at scripture, Quran, Bible, whatever we want to use. We'll see those facts are there in terms of the position that the African-American culture is in today and where we can go if we apply ourselves. So thank you again, Sister Kalita.
Imam, would you repeat your website again, those two websites?
Okay. All right. It's Building New Africa, USA.com, and Shahid Abdullah, that's SHAHID ABDULLAH.com. Both of those go to the website. That should be by the end of the week, definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Khalil, for your courage, keep bringing Imam Shahid on. Thank you for your courage, sister.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We appreciate your comments. Yes, sir. So if you can get ready, callers, you heard an excellent broadcast, and we are thankful to Brother Sharif for calling in, Muhammad Sharif. We thank him always when he contributes. He's very, very informative. So we thank you for tuning in tonight, and we thank you, Ma'am Shahid Abdullah, for joining us. We were going to ask him to close us out, and then we are going to go into Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahimahullah Alayh. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaykum assalam. Rabbana atina fid dunya hasanatan wa qina adhaban nar. Amen. Our Lord, give us the best of this world and of the hereafter, and protect us from the fire. Amen.
He met with Pope John Paul II at the Vatican in 19...
I'm not talking about you here now. I'm speaking to the dead niggas. They're gone.
We'd like to say to you, and we'd like to submit to the nation, the voice of the human soul. Today, speaking from Homewood, Illinois, Imam W.D. Muhammad. Takbir!
Praise be to Allah. Praise be to God. That's it. That is. Thank you. Thank you. Well, we, as always, we are very pleased to be here for this occasion, the radio broadcast on the first Sunday of each month. And we are happy, very happy, to see the many of you who are here from various cities, towns around in these United States. We're very pleased to see you always. We thank God for our presence, and we ask him to guide our mind and to guide our tongue so that we please what he has created us for, the calling that he has extended to us, the creator of all things. I have to put my glasses on here. I forgot to do that. When we look at the world with the eyes of the struggling person, struggling with their life or with his or her life, struggling with life. We respond to what we are looking at. And most often, we're looking at the world all about, all around us, all about us, of man-made things. And many times, man-made things in the environment.
Allahu Akbar!
Allahu Akbar, God is greater. That is what we are saying here. We greet our audience here, the radio audience and live audience, with peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. We begin always trusting God. We say Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, with the name of God, most gracious, most compassionate, merciful benefactor, merciful redeemer. We witness that He's one. We recognize all of His prophets that are in the scriptures, those scriptures that came before, the Quran, the last and final revelation revealed to Muhammad, the prophet of Arabia, and also, of course, what we find in our holy book, the Quran, for the Muslims and for the world, because we are told that Muhammad is a mercy to all the world. That's what God tells us in our holy book. Muhammad is a mercy to all the worlds. We are beginning today a little late, and I apologize for that. We like to be on time. We are very displeased when we are not on time. And that brings me to our topic today. We are living in very serious times. We're living in great times. We're living in good and bad times for human life. These are the great and dreadful days, as it's written in the scriptures, that were revealed to the people of the book before the revealing of our holy book, the Quran, to Muhammad the prophet, or the last prophet of God. This time is the time of the conclusion of things. Man's age-long work of ordering the world is in its final phase. The planning of material life, the planning of social life, the planning of moral and ethical life, all in the final phase. This was predicted long ago. The order of the world was known thousands of years ago. We are not the first to know about it. The essential nature of the earth and the essential nature of people, the social group as a social group, has been known by civilizations, by nations, for thousands of years. They knew the nature of it, so they could predict the future. What man's life, working the earth, sharing and fighting over its products or its treasures, they knew the population would grow and people would become more and more connected because of them growing and branching out. So they could produce the end. And they were men of vision and men of moral, high moral life. So they were assisted by the Great Spirit, the Spirit we call the Spirit of God. They were assisted by that. And they saw the future, and they predicted the future. And we are seeing now what they predicted. We are fortunate to be living in this great time of material progress, progress for economic life, progress for academic life, scientific progress, a fascinating world of scientific progress and technology. On one hand, this world is making great strides, morally speaking also. However, on the other hand, this world is failing our moral life. In one focus, we see the highest leaders in America and the richest company, corporate establishments in America being brought to justice. However, in another focus, we see public life and the street crowds going down in a cesspool of moral ruin. Sex-driven females, sex-driven males, switching. Now our change coins in our pockets, our nickels, our dimes, nickels and pennies and whatever, they have two sides to them, heads and tails. And switching, eventually, the tails get the seat the head was sitting in and working in. What was a friend becomes an enemy. We're living in these times. The enemy rises up so as to appear friendly. Earth, with all of her cosmic, my type is put cosmetic on here. Well, it's cosmetic. The world is not, it's cosmetic. But the word we want here is cosmic. Yes. With all, Earth with all of its cosmic relatives exists for the purpose of giving birth to fruitful, productive human life. God says that he has made everything in the skies and everything in the earth to yield its utility, its worth to the creature he made above all the living, the human creature. Human life is not formed to have we people call one another, quote, dogs, quote, bitches. Earth supports human feelings and human living, human life. Earth. Earth supports struggle and people having riches, yes. We have to identify self. We have to know what we are talking about when we are talking about each other. We are talking about the highest life form that exists in this material system that God made. Identify self. Man is the productive spirit in the body we call the earth. But actually, man working with earth brings earth to evolve, to graduate, to rise into a higher form. We are the earth. That's the point. We are earth. Earth has evolved an intelligent part of itself. The human being. Yes, to identify self is to know something about earth. Man, like everything else living, is made or formed of earth. Man of the earth is born to be a manager. Every man. And that includes women. Life only has so much time to prove it has the spirit to stay in life. To stay in life means to stay in line. To stay in line with the best disciplines that this earth evolves. The earth thirsts. No water, the earth grows nothing. The earth is appetite. Man, no appetite, he produces nothing. Life is appetite. Earth transforms and become new forms. Think what life's first material form, the earth, can do. And whatever it can do, you can experience it and be a cause for it doing it more and better. To support one's life or oneself
reflect on the human body to get some help. Flesh is a plan for conditioning the spirit. Spirit is life, if anyone will hear it. To exhaust it, no more spirit to run, only a few around laughing. Life is no fun. Spirit rises and travels upon desire. Man wanting the whole world conspires. Man conspires to manage our fires. Study the human body that serves you and be kind to it. That is being kind to yourself. Don't take drugs and abuse your life. If the body is good for life, for human life, trusting it is good for the human mind. Trusting it in the good order that it was intended to have to support the best human spirit. A clean body helps a clean mind. A filthy body hurts a clean mind. It's time to have a new fresh genesis for the human spirit on this earth. To get us up and have us birth new and better human minds. On self, we cheat. On family, we cheat. On life, we're cheating. That's why life really wants to cry. That's why souls want to hide. Night people are sleeping away the day. I was in New York, and I saw all the people out late at night. And I say, when do they go to sleep? The citizen of New York told me, say, you didn't read about it? Say, this is a city that never sleeps. Night people not knowing the way, living for the little that is paid. It is time to have a new fresh genesis and wake up into man's earth-made human mind. Four seasons come around. Snow covers all the ground. Coldness closes the doors. Selfishness, our selfish life, causes us to lose even more. Life is earth. Life is appetite. Life, not hurt and wanting to fight. Earth thirsts to have things right. Without water, earth's powers to produce remain dead, asleep beneath its covers. Life is earth and appetite. Thirst to have your spirit right. Fast life. Generic shopping. Hard times getting help or helping hand. Human life formed of earth is an intelligent body making choices. Spirit makes human life what it's worth. A spirit for resting from toil and hurt. A spirit for getting what is promised to man at birth. Born to outstretch the mineral, the plant and the animal life. Yes, human. Born to see farther than the moon and the sun. Born to struggle, yes. Rise up from rubble, yes. Life formed of earth originally gave birth to a man of human, to a man, a human, with a human heart and mind, the original man. He wills to never part with the spirit. He wills to stay firm and be kind. Man is hurt. Man is mine. Have we feelings for self and others? Search the earth. What should be man's struggle? Struggle towards the best. by going away from the worst to ship in the landmass of life. Man was created to manage it. Human life went up the mountainside to look down from the sky. Human life found the vision for planning man's life. Qualify to man the ship. This is a message to the living, not the dead. Qualify to gaze, to engage. Qualify to engage the landmass. An aerial view obtained while in the mountain high showed vital features and vital processes, showed knowledge and signs, direction for material production and education, man from head to feet, the human person's skeletal home, the human person's anatomy, heart, brain, lungs, located on floors above, consumption, ecstasy, excretion on floors of lower region. This human body a construction, more than a mere mortal's flesh, an edifice, a light tower, a beacon to science and education. Housing seeds for a new life, for a new genesis, for a metamorphosis, muscle, skin, hair, whatever else is there. The entire structure in all of his aspects and details, from the largest of his parts to his dust particles, a microscopic organism, no part of it holds back its knowledge. It's science for life, education, and for soothing comforts. Earth, the mother form, from which all life comes, everything belonging to its composition, the very large, the microscopic, a continental rock shelf, a small ash particle, a grain of sand. Earth and all that it embodies, light for brightening up man's world. Man is not the first producer for the human heart and mind. Man is a special key, K-E-Y, a special key to a treasure of keys, uncountable. Man studies himself to better see what is man's role in the big picture. Sacred are all the connections belonging to the whole of matter. Back to the mountain, back to the vision, back to Eden, for the road map of life, for wholeness and endless progress. Engage the brain, engage the heart, human values. The human lifeline is a lifeline of traditional human values. Life says, be productive to be free. The worldly life says, be anything but serious. Be free to play, be free to have fun, be free to freak out and become delirious. Success is keeping our soul, yes, success is keeping our soul out from under a world of dogs and bitches. Go out from sacred Eden, your human center. Look how it is today on all sides of this planet is hell. We the people, no managed display, no oversized ego. Stay well. Assalamu alaikum. Keep the peace. Keep his peace.
little things. Yes, little things. Little things we know make us strong. Life appears dead in wintertime. Seasons come and go. The good circumstances are gone. The beautiful faces of spring and summer have passed away. Life that was on the up and up under the cold weather looks poor and naked, looks naked and hopeless. After 3 down spirit months, 12 weeks passing their way, air warms under the sunlight. Winds blow the rain clouds to have 12 weeks of downheartedness. Springtime is back again. Life survives death. The earth gestures. Hold on, she says. Little things we know make us strong. A big chicken, a rooster, finds something to eat. That big male chicken will not eat until after calling the mother and her chicks to have dinner with him. That's an animal. A little fowl. Little things we know make us strong. From A to Z, from where we got what we eat, what protects and makes life comfortable as well, food, clothing, housing, employment, and transportation, all came from a producer hooking up to Mother Nature. We may not have the history of material production, the birth of towns and big cities. However, common sense tells us man is born naked like a baby bird. Neither his nesting nor his big cities existed before finding a way through Mother Nature. Banking and financing may be a message given by a little squirrel. Yes, running about on the ground among the trees. The little squirrel banks more than it consumes in preparing to survive a non-productive season. Springtime comes around, and a little squirrel can busy itself at exploration and play because the little bird banked on and saved something for a rainy day. Little things we know make us strong. A visit to a Mormon city, the city of Utah, put the life of a honeybee on my mind. There in Salt Lake City, Utah, I saw Mormon industries, food production, canneries, other goods and other factories. Something displayed on the wall in the Mormon community's busy business environment was brought to my attention. A symbol, an emblem, a motto representing a principle, a goal to reach. People's worth ethic. A people's worth ethic. A people busy at production. Selecting from the beautiful life, from the floral aroma, the environment of the bee. Not funky stuff. Their work time and their play time will not be bitter. The cost of them imitating the industry of the bee, it will be sweet. What make life of the honeybee a messenger teacher?
in man's world. What made ducks that fly through the air, ride the waters, dive down deep into the depths in search of goods? What made the woodpecker, the aquatic rodent, beaver, the beaver, and also a carpenter in the woodpecker? What made them teachers? What made the dragonfly, the hummingbird, teachers? Teachers of maneuvers in the air. Yes. Great maneuvers in the air. Messages to those who design flying objects, planes and whatever. Messages to them, helping them to design a better flying machine. All of this we find in Mother Earth.
Yes, sir.
Once I was listening to a preacher, Christian preacher, and I had met him and became his acquaintance, his friend, a friendly acquaintance of his, and he said in his speech, the important thing is to not make the gift more important than the giver.
That's right.
Some little insects, night crawlers, have been created to hide themselves and protect their life. They can roll up into a ball, and just one little touch will send it rolling across the floor. And when they sense that there's no more danger, they come to their normal form and walk away. To see dead ground live again, hold on to life. Some up from poverty, from poor life. Oh, mind power edge. Oh, a mind power edge for a life we are enjoying under better conditions. Yes, those who keep the life and keep it progressing while we are overcome by failure and setbacks, they have a mind power edge.
Yes.
The whole earth is a house for glorification, the glorification of the Maker. That house exists for all colors, for each and every one of us. To have it open to us, to have it house or accommodate all of us, living life in it, certain mind strategies are key. The one that started our lifeline again. His name was Farah.
Right.
And many of the old pioneers called him the friend. He had a mind power edge. Yes, he had a mind power edge. And he had keys. Keys to strategies that would make us successful.
Right.
With this gift, the mind power edge, each adult male can be his own manager.
Right.
Having the same definition for the meaning of human life and human rights situate all males and females, families and communities, to strive and compete on a fair playing field.
Right.
From continent to continent, from Asia to America, from around the world, human communities have worked at and have found their vision for keeping and building upon their humanity. their own humanity. Humanity distinguished the life we have from the life of the lower living creatures. In this vision of human life, competition and pattern connections are of life and death importance to us. In one language or another, basic connections are the same. This composition can be summarized as earth, fire, wind, and water. Of the four, is the one tending to keep its own design. Water evaporates, freezes up, wind tends to be wild, and fire is devastating and devouring, greedy. Can't control its appetite. But we know that the earth holds its form and keeps its design. That's why man is not made of water only, or of air only, or of fire only. Man is made of the earth. And we find the earth having in its composition water, air, and fire. It has the other three, but its design is giving in its matter, in its material form. It serves as a container, as a basin for water. It withstands the winds, and it has heat and cold influencing the winds, as the sun above has heat, and the atmosphere far out is very, very cold. The heavens above influencing the life, but the earth also participates, and that's what we must do, brothers. Peace. As-salamu alaykum. Allahu Akbar. Yes, my message to you is stay well. Stay well to stay out of hell. We are very pleased to be addressing our radio listening audience today. We are not here to force anybody to change your way of thinking. We're told in this religion, although most of us are not aware of it, especially those who are running about in the streets, to let other people know they are not Christian, they're Muslims. Yes, they are not aware, I'm sure, most of them, that God tells us in our religion that we should not impose or force our religion on anybody. That the way is open and free to all. Let him who has a will choose the way, and let him who does not have a will refuse it. This is our religion. We have a whole chapter that is devoted to that permission or that situation that we find ourselves in. Where we so strongly believe in what we believe, and we love so much what we believe, we are just compelled almost by our own feelings to push it on somebody else. But that disrespects the gift. If you have to push it on people, you cheapen it. And God says he has given us our religion as a gift. It is a gift from him. A gift that he formed of our own human values. And he formed that gift of man's own human values, or people's own human values. He formed it for us, and he gave it to us
to please our souls, and it does please our souls. But there are others who have their own religion, they have their own values, and they are devoted to their highest principles and most decent values. We don't want to disturb their life by insisting that they come over with us and be Muslim.
That's right.
If we were able to do that, and we are not, we would cause Christians to lose, and we would cause Muslims to lose.
Right.
Yes, both sides would lose. Pretty soon, one side will end up with the unwanted of the other side. And it would become confused. And we wouldn't be able to work together with good people from each side. So we want to do the best and the wise thing, and that is recognize our common values. We have common values that connects all of us. You believe in a higher authority, an authority over man. We believe in a higher authority over man. So we have that in common. And that's the first condition we need in order for us to be friends and work together. Because if I got God over me and you got the devil over you, we're going to have a hell of a working relationship. But we have other values in common, principles in common. There are many that we have with the Christian world. And we must understand that we live in America, predominantly Christian. We are a minority. You know, when you're outnumbered like that, you're not supposed to be thinking about forcing the other side to do anything. You're supposed to be thinking about ways to get along and help one another. We're going to get there, but we have to face our own ignorance, our own mistakes. We made some mistakes. We have to face them and start over again in a better way. And that's what my imam, I have others too, but the closest imam to me is Imam W. Dean Muhammad. And that's what my imam have me doing. I'm working hard not to push good people away, but to show good people we have too much in common not to be knowing one another and not to be assisting each other's good works. We have with us in the audience today the mayor of East Hazelcrest. Yes, there's East Hazelcrest and there's Hazelcrest. My office is in East Hazelcrest, but I know Hazelcrest also. Hey, this is really good situation. The business office is in Hazelcrest, but my office, the mosque, is in East Hazelcrest. And we have the mayor here. And I hope we have a minute before our time is up for the listening audience, the radio listening audience, because I'm inviting the mayor to come right now and greet us.
Want to say assalamu alaikum. I have two very close friends here, and that is my friend Rod Bashir and Amatullah Sharif. Rod has been with me for well over 10 years. He was with me when we did our first two elections. And he told me to just hang in there and don't quit. And I'm sure Imam Muhammad have talked about don't quit and stick-to-itness and all of that. So what has happened, Rod is an Amatula, where the section of town where they live in is what we call Dynasty Lakes. And in Dynasty Lakes, they're the ones who elected me, because I received most of my votes out of Dynasty Lakes, and that's why I'm here today, because of Rod and Amatula. Now, what I did, I did not forget them. I put them on two of my commissions. So we have Amatula on my housing. She's the housing commissioner now. She's Commissioner Sharif, and Rod is a judge. So if you get a ticket in Hazelcrest housing, you got to come before the judge, and that's Rod Bashir. Now, so also I have been in contact with Donnell Green, and he's going to come back because he has been calling me. And whatever I could do to help with the church, here, I want to do that here in Hazelcrest. You're welcome in Hazelcrest, and you just let us know what we need to do. We have some friends over in Homewood. We have some over in Markham, and I see on 159th Street, and I'm very proud to see this, that you are putting a shopping center up in Hazelcrest, in Markham. I want you to consider Hazelcrest now. See, because what I have learned, and this is about, I think, my third time, and I'm coming more, and Rod is, just like you said, don't try to push them in, but Rod is working on me very hard. So we have three sections of property right in Hazelcrest, Rod, on 167th Street. And with this CDC, I believe you all might look at that and help us develop that. You know what I'm saying? You might want to consider that, because it's right east of the Walmart they're putting up, 167th Street. We got about 35 or 40 acres in there. Bring the delegation over, Rod. So I just want to thank everyone, and this will not be my last time coming. I love coming, and I learned a lot today, and I'm going to be back to see you, and I'm looking for, Donnell to come this week to talk to me, and we're going to see what we could do to help out. Thank you very much.
I think the radio broadcast hour is over, but in case it's not, I want to give my greetings to our greetings of peace and best wishes to all of you all out there for a happy holiday season and for a better year in 2006. Peace be unto all of you. Assalamu alaikum. If you were listening for that almost an hour, well, 40 minutes, the whole broadcast time was an hour, but I was late. The announcements were made for the first 10 or 15 minutes. If you were listening to the address, you know that it connected
spirit with earth and with the natural creation of the natural world. You know that. So let us continue in that vein and in that spirit. Now, but I'm speaking now to a Muslim audience, so I come from Muslim language, from Muslim text and Muslim language, which will benefit everybody because our language is universal. And we wouldn't, you know, Muslims are told, if there's three of you, let not two of you speak over the head of the third person. This is Islamic instructions. If there are two of you, let not the third of you, let not the two of you close out the third person. So, I don't know how many of us we have here, but if we have 1,000, I say we have one. If we got two Christians, I say we got one Muslim here and two Christians. I count all of us as one. And I don't know where their minds are, so I have to count them by their numbers. So there's two Christians here and us. There are two Christians here and one Muslim. Okay? Yes. So I'm not going to talk to one Muslim and close out Christians, the third. So whatever I say, it's going to be speaking to Christians, ideas, Christian religion as well. It'll speak to their religion and their ideas as well. Now, and I could give it to you, as Mr. Farrar said, I can give it to you in the twinkling of an eye. There will be absolutely no time passed. No more than the twinkling of an eye. Yes. We have to understand our religion. Reason why the world of our religion is doing so poorly today and having so much internal trouble and also external problems from other nations, especially from our nation in the person of President Bush. And I say our nation in his presence because he's doing a lot of things that high-ups in our nation are not approving right now. In fact, his popularity is waning fast. He's losing a lot of support. and I didn't vote for him. I want you to know that. I voted for the Democratic leader, not for Mr. Bush. And it wasn't because of my allegiance to a party. I'm not committed to either party. I'm committed to supporting excellent leadership. That's all. Leadership that we can feel comfortable with. If we have choices, I want the choice that we can be most comfortable with. And that's how I vote. All right. yes. So, beginning this address to you now, I'm going to use some quotes from Quran, from our holy book, the number one authority for Muslims and those who would represent Islam, the Quran, the book of God, the final revelation, who came to Muhammad ibn Abdullah of Arabia, the land of the Arabs, to a man who had already been recognized by his countrymen as a model of the excellence of life. The excellence of life. They called him As-Sadiq. In Arabic, it means, in English, it means the truthful, the one who does not lie. And they called him El-Amin, the honest, trustworthy one, the one that will not disappoints you and fail the trust, but he keeps the trust. These are two names that he had while he was not knowing the Quran or religion as such or revelation. But he was a person who obeyed his highest and cleanest motivations, who respected his noble soul and did not disappoint it. This is Muhammad the Prophet, Muhammad the Prophet of Arabia. And he represents, as Jesus Christ does also, he represents the common God-given life and excellence of all people, of all people. And that's why I guess he was worthy of the title A Mercy to All People, or Mercy to All the Nations.
Right.
This perception of our religion as a religion of the original nature, of the original excellence of matter itself that manifests its support to human excellence in the biological body, in the human chemistry, and in our intelligence, our emotions and intelligence and everything. Yes. God wants us to be connected with that and to see that he did not bring us an alien life to replace our human life that was born or was birthed out of the earth, this matter out of the earth. No, he does not offer us anything from heaven or from the sky or from distant quarters, distant distances out in space, and say, no, your life is not able, your life is not fit, your life can't bear my work that I want you to carry. I have to change your life. I give you a new life. I'm going to give you a spirit from outer space somewhere, and you're going to become a divine creature. Then you'll be able to bear my work and carry out my orders. No, that was not the case. God was very pleased, contrary to what some religious authorities say, God was very pleased with his human creation. I'm a student of both the books, Bible and Quran, the Quran. I'm a student of both these holy books, and I think I'm qualified to debate anybody on earth. I'm telling you what I feel. I won't back up from anybody. I think I'm qualified to debate anybody on this earth. And I'll stand on the grounds, on the sacred, pure grounds of the Bible and the Quran. And they'll find that they will not be able to prove me wrong. No. What I don't feel comfortable with, I don't say. What I say, I stand by. And I know the same idea that I'm getting ready to give you from Islam is in Christianity.
Yes.
Same idea.
Yes.
Only, and Islam is brought more to view. It's brought closer to the eye. And it's put more in the big focus. Big focus. Whereas in other religion, they put it in big focus, but shrouded in language that you can't understand.
Yeah. Right.
So you don't get it. You don't see it. And they mention it in little small verses in language. They mention it. So you're reading and rereading all about other things. And there it is hidden in the language in a little small word. You miss it. But both these religions have as their main message the message of creation-supported human excellence.
Right.
I repeat it. Creation-supported human excellence. So now I
go to the language of Quran. God says to us, after revealing the language through Muhammad and to him, for all of us, God says to us, you are, antum, means all of us Muslims, antum khayra ummatan, you are the best of communities, ukhrijat linnas, brought out for all people, brought out from all people, brought out from where? Ukhrijat linnas, brought out from where? If I would say, kharaju, kharaju, al-muslimuna, hum kharaju min huna, the Muslims, they went out from this place. If I say, I went out, kharajtu min huna, I went out from here, kharajtu min huna, I went out from here. There's a people that were in captivity under the ruling order of the Pharaoh Egyptians. And they had been cut off from any ruling. He was unaware. This is both Quran and Bible. This story is both Quran and Bible. And God chose him. His people were expecting a deliverer. You catch enough hell, you're going to hope for, even if you don't expect, a deliverer. So his people were expecting a deliverer. And they were wondering, would this be Moses? And since we have this member of our group that has been accepted by Pharaoh in his palace, Pharaoh has taken him as an adopted son. Maybe this is the one that's going to be our deliverer. They were having hopes in him because he was in such a fortunate situation, a good situation, to help them. He was right there at the side of the ruler, the Pharaoh. But Moses didn't have the knowledge, didn't have any understanding. But he had a spirit in him that was of his people. So when he saw one of the Egyptians mistreating one of his people, he hit him and killed him. And God charged him with that. Yes, God finally got to him and talked to him. And when he opened his eyes up, then he told him, you committed a sin. It wasn't enough to kill a man over. So, as it goes, he finally gets communication from God. And that mountain I was talking about, yes, Moses went up that mountain, and Muhammad went up that mountain. And Dr. King said he went up that mountain. Yes. And seeing that his followers didn't hear him, or they misunderstood him. I think they thought he meant he went up to the mountain of the Capitol Hill. No, that ain't what he's talking about. He was talking about the mountain that Abraham was once on, the mountain that Moses was on. He was talking about that mountain. He was talking about the mountain that Muhammad the prophet was on when he got communication from God. Same mountain by different names. Yes? That's what he was talking about. So, when I mentioned going up the mountain top, I mean rising up, ascending in the best human light beam. Up the best human light beam. Ascending upward in that light beam. To make connection with the revelator, with the revealer that can reveal all things. Going up that in that light beam, going up, rising, ascending the light beam. That's what I'm saying. Yes. For the vision, getting up high enough to have the eye of an eagle.
Yeah, that's right.
An eagle can be way up there, out of sight. His prey can't see him. He's too far away. But the eagle's eyesight is so good, he can see the prey crawling around on earth or flying around in the lower air. And he comes down like a dive bomb, sweeps down on him and takes him away. Eagle.
All right, thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. Praise be to Allah. We give the greetings of peace, as we say in Islam, Assalamu alaikum. And being this is the month in which the Quran was revealed to the model human being for us and any, as God says in our holy book, model human being for any who believes in God and the last day. Muhammad the Prophet, upon him be prayers and the peace. So we wish you in this blessed month a blessed Ramadan, Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan.
And I'm sure that we will be in different places celebrating the Eid, so I also wish you all a blessed and happy Eid. And if it is a blessed Eid, it will be a happy Eid. Praise be to Allah. I'm happy to be back in this area and to meet with you all in this town and hosted by our Imam, a wonderful leader providing real leadership for us all here in Trenton, Imam Abdul Wali Ali. We thank Allah for such leaders who will give more than what you ask of them. Sometimes we don't need much from each other, but we need a lot from each other if we are going to establish the community or society of Islam or Muslims in America. We need a lot from all of us, a lot from all of us. And I'm often telling my associates who are working with me in Markham and in the area of town, suburban areas of Chicago, my hometown, I'm often telling them that if I was working for just myself, you wouldn't see me and I wouldn't be known. I'm working for the interest, for the cause, for the interest. I said, every one of us that's working in these offices, I say we should know that we are working for the interest, for the cause. And the interest is always above each and every one of us as individuals. The interest is bigger than all of us. So I tell them, don't buddy up with each other. Buddy up with the interest. And then you're helping everybody, and you're everybody's buddy in this community. Praise be to Allah. And that brings me to the idea that I want to begin with for this presentation here. We are together in bigger ways than we think with Christians and Jews. And some others, not just Christians and Jews, and some others, because Allah mentioned another group in the Bible, in the Quran, pardon me, that I thought were non-existent. I thought they were extinct. And they are called the Sabians. Sabians. Saba. And Quran. The Sabians. They are still existing. They're a religious group that's still existing and practicing their way. on earth today. Really, we are told to recognize, I give you the words of Quran, any who believe in God and the last day. Any who believes in the Creator, a real God. They can't believe in their God that they made with their ideas or with their minds or with their hands. It has to be the real God, the Creator of the heavens and earth. If they believe in that Creator that caused all to be in the skies and in the earth, including our own existence, and they believe in the last day, meaning they believe they have to answer to Him for how they live this life, then we should embrace them as believers. They are not kafirs, they are believers. We share with them the idea, the people of the book I'm speaking specifically of now, those people that are called in our holy book, the people of the book, meaning Jews and Christians. We share with them the idea that all of this world, material scheme, skies and earth, is not the creation of any or the doings of any but one God. Where we go from there may cause us to verge away from each other, to depart from each other. Where we go from there may establish a different house for one another. Different house for them, different house for us. But we start in that one place, agreeing there, and that's the beginning of the world and man, according to God. God doesn't tell us in the Quran how the creation, the skies, the sun, the moon, and all these things came into being, or how He made them, or how He created them. The beginning of our knowledge, our introduction that we get from God, that introduces His works, the creation, the worlds, to us, began with God focusing on man. The first verses, communication that came to Muhammad the Prophet, said, Muhammad, read. So the attention is on a man, Muhammad. And God wants to teach this man to read. It's not an ordinary reading. It's read God's communication to mankind, to you, for mankind, and my communication to mankind. It says, read. Muhammad told him, read. And he said, read in the name of your Lord who created. Ikra bismi rabbuka alladhi khalaq. Then he told him something about the God who created. Khalaq al-insana. They say he created the sky. He's just talking to him. And he's not telling him he created the sun, the moon, and the stars. He created the earth and the water and the wind and the rubber. Khalaq al-insana. He created a human being. Min alaq. From a small clot of congealed blood, the clot. Then he told him, read again. Told him again, read. Ikra, he said. And he tells him some more about God. Wa rabbuka al-akram. And your Lord is most generous. The translation gives us, and your Lord is most generous. But your Lord is also the one to be respected above all. Akram. It's not only generous, also honorable, deserving, respect above all. To be honored, to be respected above all. Wa rabbuka al-akramu alladhi 'allama al-insana. The one who taught the human being. Ma lam ya'lam, what he was not knowing before. So God is communicating for the whole of mankind through his special servant and messenger that he has taken from the world, who he took from the world that without any spot or blemish in his character. He chose a man, Muhammad, who had no spot or blemish in his character, who had lived 40 years without being pointed to as a person that had a bad character, the most honorable in character that the people knew in his land, the land that is now called Arabia, the most honorable one. His name that he was given by the people, not by God, by the people, was the truthful. Another name they gave him, title names that they gave Muhammad the prophet, common name. They wouldn't say, oh, Muhammad. Those people who didn't know him, was not close to him or anything, they knew of his character. His character was well known in the whole tribe of Quraysh, the biggest tribe and the most respected tribe of the Arabs. Well known. He was well known. And they would say to him, Ya Amin. Oh, trustworthy one. Yes, Sadiq. Oh, the one who never lies. So here's a man that God picked from the people who lived a life of idolaters, except from a few among them who didn't do that. And Muhammad, the prophet, prayers and peace be on him, was among the few that didn't worship the idols, didn't do those things, didn't follow them in their culture, religious culture. So he continued to communicate with the Muhammad. He said, your Lord is most generous, to be respected above all things, who taught mankind, what they were not before knowing. Now these are the first verses communicated to Muhammad from God, focusing on a man for the future good of all men, or all mankind, women and men, the human society on this planet Earth. A learned and highly respected teacher who has passed now, but he may be established as the leading teacher for Islamic reawakening. It's Muslims reawakening in our time, in this modern time. Maulana Abul Ala Maududi of Pakistan. He said to us on Mount Arafat, when we were making the Hajj there, on Mount Arafat we were gathered, he said to us, maybe I should tell you what he said to them first about us here. He said, we will make a mistake if we try to lead the Muslims of America. He said, we should leave them alone and just assist them the best way we can. But let them lead. He said, we should not try to lead them. That's what Maulana Maududi said. And let me tell you what my father said. Don't follow them. I didn't say I said that now. My father said, don't follow them. And I'm not agreeing with my father, and I'm not agreeing with Maulana Maududi, but I am acknowledging a real concern that both of them were addressing when they said what they said. Yes, because I want our leadership to be like the leadership of our Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be on him. I want it to have in it different colors so they know that we are following his way. So we can't have all blacks in our leadership. We have to have black, brown, yellow, red, and even white. And even white. In our leadership. Praise be to Allah. continuing with this point in the opening of my address. Now, so what I've said is unlike the Bible that begins, well, for those average person, the common person, when we read Genesis, the beginning of Genesis, we think it begins with the creation of the world. And really the moon comes before the sun in the creation. In Genesis, God creates the moon and puts the moon in the heavens before he puts the sun up. And one thing for sure, in Islam, the day starts with the night, not with the sunrise. It starts with the night, the day. When we fast, we observe the moon, and we begin our fasting from the time we observe the moon, whether it's in the day or in the night, because we know the new crescent can appear in the day too. But whether it's in the day or in the night, we begin. But actually, we do think of ourselves really starting our fast, making our intention on the night, in the night, when we know the Ramadan. We make our intention in the night, and we begin right then fasting. Because fasting in Ramadan, we know is the fast from that the flesh needs. We say the carnal body. With that the flesh needs. But it's not only that. It's a fast from that the spirit needs as well. That's why we are reading the Quran. We are staying in the Quran as often as we can. We're reading so much of the Quran all the time. That's the discipline of Quran, of the Ramadan, daily life in the Ramadan. And we are also told to stay away from things that will take us out of our peaceful spiritual state. So you don't want to engage somebody in an argument. Say if someone annoys you, they tell them, I'm fasting. I mean, I'm not going to respond to you. You're picking at me. You want me to pull me into an argument, but I'm not going to do it. I'm fasting. So it's a discipline for our whole life, not just for the physical body. But it's extremely important for us to know that the spiritual body affects the body, the material body, the mortal life affects the spiritual life. And the spiritual life affects the mortal life. And the spiritual life came here like God wanted it to come here. And once we woke up in a material body, the trouble started. The trouble started. So we have to know that the discipline for the physical body is most important, because if the house is peaceful, the spirit dwelling in it can have peace. You see? Yes. Okay. So, continuing now, the focus is on the human being, not like Genesis, and God made the heavens and the earth, and he put a sun in the sky, a moon in the sky, and then he put a sun in the sky, and he made the oceans, and he put all these things. So first it's telling us about the outer world, whereas the Quran, the first words of revelation that came to Muhammad, addressed a man without spot or blemish, that had lived a spotless life, a life perfectly acceptable to God as a human being. Even before any religion came to him, he was not Christian, he was not Jewish, he had not been taught by any of them, no religious teachers ever tutored him or anything. He didn't know about the Bible, scriptures, and all that stuff. He didn't know about that, all those things. He didn't know about that. He was not a Jew or a member of the Jewish society, or anyone privileged to have to be exposed to their way of life. So here's a man that had lived among idol worshippers, but had kept the human life that God created him with when God made him a human being from his mother and from his father. Isn't that wonderful? And if you don't think this have connection with previous scriptures, you're missing the boat. The scriptures tell us that such a one would be given to the world, to lead the world. All right, you might say, as a Christian, you might say, well, that was Jesus Christ. I'm through with it now. I'm going to get back on my topic. So God focused the human being. And if we want to understand the world, first understand your own self. Because the world to to a rooster is not a world to me. The world to an elephant is not the world to me. To an ant, any creature, any other living creature. The world to those living creatures is not the world to me. I don't want to perceive the world and relate to the world the way they do. I'm a human being. I need to perceive the world and relate to it as a human person. And if I don't even know myself, then first I have to know myself in order to know how I am to relate to the outer world or to the external world. And that's where God goes for the last revelation. Goes right to man, focus on man, and what does he say? How does he tell Muhammad how that all began? He told him from a clot of congealed blood. All people made like that. But he didn't leave him just right there. He also went where the Bible went to. The Bible eventually got to man. But it went to the creation first, and then it got to man. And on the sixth day, the last day, talks about man. And on the seventh day, everything rested. That's the Genesis, the Bible. Whereas in the Quran, God focused on man, on a selected man, a special man, that have kept his original excellence and have not had revelation from God or help from Scripture. See that? I wish I could go a little more with you all in the wrong, but I'd have to digress. I'm going to stay right with my talk. I'm going to stay right with my topic, I guess, because you don't have too much time. I know when it's time to eat, I'm going to stop. But long before then, because I have to be on a plane, and inshallah, I'll take my plane, be with my little security guard with me. He's out there somewhere. He's 11 years old. Terrific little fella, and a great company. A great company for anybody. He's sociable. Okay. Yes. So he didn't leave Muhammad with that first picture of the beginning of mankind from a clock. Then he takes Muhammad to where Genesis goes on the sixth period of phase. In that progression, he says to Muhammad, gives revelation for all of us. And he said, God said to the angels, I am making a khalifa in the earth. He didn't say we are making a khalifa in the earth. He said to the angels, I am making a khalifa in the earth. And when I have inspired him or given him of my spirit, make sense that to him, submit to him, make sense that to him. Now, he was talking to angels, but also there was a jinn among them who was performing in the role of the angel, the leading angel. He was leader of the angels. His name, according to our scripture, is Iblis, who was a jinn. And how do we know he's a jinn? Because when Allah tells us in the Quran, and the jinn people, the jinn community, he made them a fire that does not repent. Oh, I'm sorry. That ain't what it says. I'm sorry. It says a fire that gives off no smoke. And he said also that Muhammad told us this of himself. I'm sorry, Allah didn't say it. Muhammad told us this of himself, peace be upon him. He said, when they asked, do you also have a jinn? He said, yes. He said, but my jinn became Muslim. How wonderful. Yes, so that means all human beings have a jinn. And God has also assigned to us angels. Because God tells us these things. We don't have to question these things if we are believers. We don't question what God tells us. So we know that God says he's assigned to each an angel. an angel to record, and an angel to help you, to warn. Record, they're given each of us angels. And we also possess a jinn. So look, everything that God was speaking to, right, immediately in the life of man, right? Angels and jinn. So when the jinn that was leading the angels refused to accept Allah's plan for man, that he was going to make him Khalifa, meaning that he's going to make him God's going to make man his responsible representative in the earth for the interest of human life and human future and the future of that life. That's what God is saying. And the angels heard that, they were disturbed, because their knowledge of human being was this, that you are free, you have free will, and because you have free will, the angels don't have free will, they only have Allah's will, God's will. So because we have free will, the angels worried. Say they're going to be, they will create bloodshed. Bloodshed. They will be killing and spilling blood. And what did God say? What did the Almighty God say? Allah said to them, I know what you know not. And then he challenged them. He said, tell me your names. Tell me your own names, if you know. And they responded with the nature that God had given them. They said, we have no knowledge except that you gave us. That's what they said. The angels said that to God. Then God, again, turns our attention to man. And he says to Adam, he has not yet established Adam, but he said to Adam, he said, Adam, tell them their names. And Adam told them their names. Then they submitted, all except one, the leader, their leader, Iblis, who was not in his true being or nature or creation. He was not angel. Originally, he was jinn. Jinn, not angel. So being unlike them, he had, just like man, he had limited free will. He can obey or he can disobey. He had his own power to obey or disobey. God gave him, made him like men. So he refused. He saw the trouble coming for the world with man being responsible for his life in the earth and future. He refused. Abba wastakbara. These are the words, the expressions from Quran, from God communicated to us through Muhammad, by way of the angel through Muhammad. He said, God said of him, about me, that jinn, Iblis, he said he refused. Abba, I mean he refused. Wastakbara. You can't even say the word stakbara without feeling your body want to go up. Wastakbara. Your body wants to go, you want to straighten up a little bit. Proud. Wastakbara. And he became puffed out in the chest. Proud, proud, arrogant. He thought that he was so much greater than man.